Thank you, everyone. Have a good lunch. Good. The whole time. So either you're not getting inspired because you're nice, or you fall asleep. It's usually what happens after lunch, right? So sometimes they call it the graveyard session at some of the conferences and things. Yeah. Anyway, so let us continue and see what happens. So we are working on the sutta called the Removing Resentment, about how to overcome ill will towards various types of people depending on the kind of qualities they have. So far we have looked at people who have some good qualities and some bad qualities. And the idea is always to move your attention towards the good ones and throw away the bad ones. That's the idea behind this. And now we come to the third person, and it goes as follows. How, friend, should resentment be removed towards the person whose bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, but from time to time gains an opening of the mind, plasticity of mind? So here is somebody whose behavior is not all that good, right? Bad body, bad speech. But from time to time, this person gains an opening of the mind, facility of the mind. What does that mean? What it means is the Pali here for opening of the mind is vivarana citta. Vivarana is the opposite of the nivarana. The nivarana are the hindrances. So this is like a mind without hindrances. So sometimes you gain like a nice mind state, right? Plasticity of the mind is here like the passivity, so it's basically the kind of the mind which is serene and peaceful and at ease. So it is a mind without hindrances. So somebody who has those, that is already a very good quality, right? If you have a mind without hindrances, that is a mind which is very pure. And you may wonder, how is it that somebody who has all this bad behavior can have a mind, a pure mind state? How is that possible? And remember that human beings are very complex, right? We come from a past where we may have done some good practices in the past, perhaps in a past life or whatever. We come into this existence with a lot of good qualities, but then somehow we fall in with the wrong crowd and we do bad things in this life. But we still have some of those qualities from the past life there. So sometimes you get that serenity of mind despite your bad conduct. So this is that kind of person. So, how are we supposed to deal with this person? And this is what Venerable Sariputta has to say. Suppose there is a little water in a puddle, and a person might arrive afflicted and oppressed by the heat, weary, thirsty, and parched. He would think, this little bit of water is in the puddle. If I try to drink it with my cupped hands or a vessel, I will stir it up, disturb it, and make it undrinkable. Let me get down on all fours, suck it up like a cow, and depart. He then gets down on all fours, sucks the water up like a cow, and departs. So too, when a person's bodily and verbal behavior are impure, but from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, a placidity of mind, on that occasion one should not attend to the impurity of the bodily and verbal behavior, but should instead attend on the opening of the mind, the placidity of the mind that he gains from time to time. In this way, resentment towards that person should be removed. So here, there is only a tiny bit of good qualities, so you have to be careful. If you look a little bit too much to one side or too much to the other side, then you will see the bad qualities. You have to focus very narrowly on those good qualities, right? Just like the little bit of water, which is nice to drink, you have to be very careful, you don't disturb it. If you disturb it, it will become muddy, and it's like the bad qualities seeping into the good ones. It becomes muddy and undrinkable. It doesn't really cool you down anymore. It doesn't give you relief from your heat, the heat of anger, the heat of negativity inside of you, because you can't drink it anymore. So you can see here, again, as I was saying before, the Buddhas and Venerable Sariputta, in this case, emphasis on metta, if there is a chance to focus on the good qualities, always do that first, right? Even when there's only a narrow little field of good qualities, and the bad ones are found everywhere else, so even then should you try to focus on the good ones. So this shows you, again, once again, the preeminence of metta, of the friendliness and kindness of the path, and how important it is to develop that ability here. So, yes. Okay, so that is number three. Okay, let's move on to the next one. The next one is interesting because it is slightly different. How, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose bodily and verbal behavior are impure and who does not gain an opening of the mind and placidity of mind from time to time? Suppose a sick, afflicted, gravely ill person was traveling along a highway, and the last village behind him and the next village ahead of him were both far away. He would not obtain suitable food and medicine or a qualified attendant. He would not get to meet the leader of the village district. Another man traveling along the highway might see him and arouse sheer compassion, sympathy, and tender concern for him, thinking, "Oh, may this man obtain suitable food, suitable medicine, and a qualified attendant. May he get to meet the leader of the village district. For what reason? So that this man does not encounter calamity and disaster right here." Right? So, let me just maybe just stop there for a second just to consider that simile. And first of all, this is the simile. So here is somebody who you cannot see any good qualities in, right? No verbal good qualities, and no, all, you know, purity in body and speech. And also, he doesn't really have any good mind states either. And interesting, as to how you, this is kind of a situation that is important for all of us. So how do you deal with somebody when you cannot see any good qualities in that person? And sometimes we meet people like that. Remember that because you can't see any good qualities doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't any good qualities there. So that you can't see them, right? This is kind of an important understanding straight away here. Because what that means is that if you look more carefully and if you are more circumspect, you may actually discover that there are some good things there. But at the time, you can't see it. And because you can't see it, for you, that is what kind of person this is. So that person is a person with all bad qualities as far as you are concerned. And that is the important thing here. Whether that's really the truth or not, it doesn't really matter so much. It's perception that actually is the important thing. How we look at the world, how we look at people. And the beautiful thing about this is that when you see somebody like that who's lacking in good qualities, you should regard them as somebody who is sick, right? Somebody who is ill. It's a wonderful way. How do you deal with somebody when they are ill, when somebody is gravely sick? Normally, what you do is you have a sense of compassion, right? Somebody can't really look after themselves because they have some kind of terrible illness or whatever. You want to help them. You want to support them. You don't tell them, you idiot, it is your fault that you are sick or whatever. Look after yourself or something like that. That would be very cruel and very harsh thing to say if you said that. Usually, you get a sense of compassion for people when they are sick. You want to help out because you recognize people don't really want to be sick. If they are ill, the reason is because somehow they were unlucky and they ate the wrong thing or they went to the wrong place and they got the wrong virus or bacteria or whatever. And for that reason, they got ill now. So because of that, compassion arises. And a person like that is exactly in the same position. They are ill, right? Why is it that somebody has no good qualities? Well, the reason is because they are deluded. They don't understand what is for their own benefit and what is for their own, for their own suffering in the future. If they understood, they wouldn't be like that. They wouldn't act in that way. Because they're completely deluded. They don't understand. They kind of turn the world upside down. They think what is bad is good and what is good is bad. And because of that, they are actually heading in the wrong direction. And what they are doing is they're creating enormous amounts of bad karma, suffering for themselves in this life, and also suffering for themselves in the future. without understanding. They want to be happy, right? Everybody wants to be happy. Nobody wants to be depressed and sad and full of suffering. Anybody here would like to be very depressed and sad and full of suffering? Nobody is like that, right? We all want happiness in one way or another. So here is somebody who wants to be happy. What they are doing is creating suffering for themselves. Right, that's what we mean by delusion, mean by misunderstanding, by wrong view, distortion in perception, etc. Then when you see that, you can actually have a sense of compassion towards this person. The suffering that they create for you is tiny, tiny, tiny compared to the suffering they are creating for themselves. Suffering for people is far, far greater. And then you start to look at these things in the right way. So they are ill, they are suffering, they are heading towards disaster, they are heading towards death. Let's see, have a look at the other side of the scenario here.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Sure, and I, in this situation, I'm not the one who's
doing it. You can never be sure. You can never be absolutely sure, but you have to trust your own judgment, right? If you don't trust your own judgment, there's nothing else to go by now. So just be as honest as you possibly can, try to look at the situation carefully, and then if you feel that you are right, well then this is the right way of doing this. Again, as I said, remember that because you can only go from your own judgment, you assume that you are right. If it later on turns out that you were not right, well then you take your opinion, right? You don't stubbornly hold on to what you thought before. You take your opinion when the facts require that you to change your opinion. But you have to work from your own perception. That's the only thing we have to work with. You can ask others as well. As soon as we ask them, you say, oh, you know, am I right? Is this person really, I find this person so difficult. You know, please tell me some good side. I'd like to hear some good side of this person, right? And other people say, oh, I cannot see any good side either. And then you know, maybe you're right. Something like that, right? Ask for some help. Okay. So too, when a person's bodily and verbal behavior are impure, and he does not gain from time to time an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind, on that occasion, one should arouse sheer compassion, sympathy, and tender concern for him, thinking, oh, may this venerable one, means here anybody, doesn't mean monks or nuns, means anyone, abandon bodily misbehavior and develop good bodily behavior. May he abandon verbal misbehavior and develop good verbal behavior. May he abandon mental misbehavior and develop good mental behavior. For what reason? So that with the breakup of the body, after death, he will not be reborn in the plane of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. This way, resentment towards that person should be removed. So if you are bad, you will get your just desserts anyway. Everybody gets what they deserve, so you know you don't have to be the one to punish anyone there. That is what happens in this case. So you have sympathy for them. You understand that whatever suffering they create for you will actually is just their stupidity and ignorance. And really, they deserve compassion rather than being angry with them. And then comes the last person, the person who is very pure. How then should resentment be removed towards the person whose bodily and verbal behavior are pure, and who from time to time gains an opening of the mind, placidity of mind? Suppose there were a pond with clear, sweet, cool water, clean with smooth banks, a delightful place shaded by various trees. Then a man might arrive, afflicted and oppressed by the heat, weary, thirsty, and parched. Having plunged into the pond, he would bathe and drink, and then, after coming out, he would sit or lie down in the shade of a tree right there. So too, when a person's bodily and verbal behavior are pure, and from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, placidity of mind, on that occasion one should attend to his pure bodily behavior, to his pure verbal behavior, and to the opening of the mind, the placidity of the mind that he gains from time to time. And this way, resentment towards that person should be removed. Right? So here is the person who is full of good qualities. This is like the Arahant, right? Or the Aryan, this dream maker, somebody who's gone a long way on the Buddhist path. And because of that, if you get angry with them, right? That's just the way things are. It doesn't matter if somebody's an Arahant. You read in the suttas, people get angry with the Buddha. Of course, this happens because it's got nothing to do with the person, it has to do with us, it has to do with our own defilement. So you always get angry with people regardless of how spiritually attained they are. But of course, be careful with that, because it's not very, very wise to get too angry with an Arahant. A little bit is okay, because anger is natural, but in the long run, it's not going to be to your benefit if you're really angry with lots of Arahants in the world. There's actually a nice sutta about that. There's a sutta in the Sanghita Nikaya, which you may know about. And this is the sutta where there is a Brahmin called Akosaka Bharadvaja. And Akosaka Bharadvaja means Akosaka, the reviler. He goes around reviling people, right? Very angry character. And he goes to the Buddha, and he says to the Buddha, he says really bad things to the Buddha. You are terrible, you know, I can't remember exactly how the conversation goes, but it's in there in the Sanghita Nikaya, in the Brahmana Sanghita. And then after a while, the Buddha says to him, I don't accept all your, you know, all your reviling, all your abuse. I don't accept that. And then he says, it's just like when somebody holding a party or a feast, and they invite lots of friends to their house, and the friends eat, and then whatever is left over after the feast is finished, he says to this man, who does it belong to? Well, it belongs to the host, right? The people who held the party. In just the same way, all this anger and things that you are sending out to me, it belongs to you, and you get it back again. Right? He's telling him basically that, you know, you are going to have to feel the result of that anger. It goes back to you again afterwards. It's a nice way of thinking about this. Of course, that Brahmin then thinks about it, and very interesting, and it becomes a disciple of the Buddha, etc. So that's quite inspiring. Of course, when somebody is so inspiring, and even though you get angry, it's quite easy to get your mind back again on the right track, because there's so many good qualities to look at, right? And when you consider those good qualities, the anger disappears. You plunge into the pool. You kind of drink of those good qualities, and you bathe. And then when you come out afterwards, you sit or lie down in the shade of a tree right there. It's like you take this person to be a teacher, right? Afterwards, you stay there. You don't go away. And they become your teacher. So you lie down in the shade with that person. It's like the Buddha or an Arahant. You decide that you wish to actually stay with them afterwards. This is the idea of somebody who is very spiritually attained. Towards the very end, Brahma Sakura says here, that friends, by means of a person who inspires confidence in every way, the mind gains confidence. Right? And this is one of those basic principles of Dhamma, is that one of the ways you decide where to place your faith, where to place your confidence. One of the ways of doing that is that you have to observe people to see what their qualities are like, right? This is straight from the suttas. It's found in the Chankya Sutta and the Majjhima Nikaya, for example. The Buddha talks about it in the Mantaka Sutta, also in the Majjhima Nikaya. And it says you observe the Buddha, you observe people, and then when you see that they are worthy of your confidence, worthy of your faith, then you place faith in that person. Right? So you see, if somebody has no defilements, what do they have? They have metta, they have compassion, they have wisdom. That's the result of not having any defilements. The lack of defilements can be seen in somebody just by observing them to some extent. So when you're around somebody for a long period of time and you see these good qualities again and again, it inspires confidence. And this is what it is saying here. There is a nice sutta in the, I'm not sure now where it is, but it is somewhere in the 40 times. And it's a sutta where the Buddha says that even just seeing an Arahant in the world is a great benefit for people. Just seeing somebody who's an Arahant. And why is that? How come seeing it? We're supposed to learn the teaching, right? Why is seeing enough? And because seeing, as I say, seeing is believing, right? Isn't that the kind of old saying? Seeing is believing. So if you see something which is different, which is extraordinary, somebody has qualities that normally you don't find in the world, right? It opens your eyes and think, whoa, wow, is that possible? Is it possible to be like that? And you think that is so inspiring when you see them. You feel inspired by that. It lifts you up. And you think to yourself, I too would like to have some of those qualities, right? Because you feel inspired by that. And then you, this becomes a very powerful thing, just to see an arahant in the world. You don't even have to teach it an arahant, right? You can just sit there and look really cool, right? Really relaxed. Isn't that nice? Then people look at you and they think, whoa, look at that, right? And they get inspired as a consequence. I was just saying yesterday about how recently I went to Thailand. And when I went there, I met this, I visited one monk called Ajahn Kanha. You know Ajahn Kanha? Yeah, okay. And he is very, very nice, very inspiring. And he is like, you get this feeling when you walk into his presence, you feel, oh, there's something different about this monk. It's very powerful sense of peace, of kindness, of all these good qualities. And when you ask people, they say, oh, he's been like that for the last 30 years. You know, completely like that, always like this for the last 30 years. There's all these people, right, around him all the time, helping him, doing things for him. Massive donations coming into his monastery all the time. But he's like this very simple monk, sitting there smiling all the time. Right? That's all he does. He doesn't teach very much. He doesn't do very much. He has this big... this big kind of pot of lollies, right? little sweets. And when people come and they sit in front of him, he takes all the sweets and he throws them out of people. And sweets flowing everywhere. That's kind of his favorite thing to do now. But he's not affected by that at all. He's completely oblivious. All these people coming to bow down to him and kind of almost like worship him. He just sits there and he does this very simple mind, right? Very just smiling, big smile on his face all the time. Very beautiful example then, and very the sense of, powerful sense of no self, right? No self there, no conceit, nothing like that. This is the sort of thing that we start to see when we meet some of these great teachers. As you also said, that my own teacher, Alan Brown, is also a bit like that. He's also kind of very, even though he's very extremely famous, he's one of the most famous monks in the world. In the monastery, he's just himself. He's just completely natural, right? He doesn't boss people around. He doesn't do anything like that. He's just a very kind of simple monk. Cracks some corny jokes, Sometimes the jokes are really good, but sometimes they're really corny. he doesn't mind. He doesn't care. Other people think, okay, it doesn't matter to him. And it's actually very inspiring. Anyway, so now the very last sentence of this sutta. These friends are the five ways of removing resentment by means of which a bhikkhu can entirely remove resentment towards whomever it has arisen. Bhikkhu, bhikkhuni, layperson, layman, laywoman, everybody can remove resentment in this way. So there you are, a mixture. One of them is about compassion, right? The fourth one is all about compassion, understanding somebody as a sin. And the other ones are all about metta, about seeing the good qualities in somebody else. So, now you have seen how this works, the idea of abandoning unwholesome qualities, right? Now you hopefully have some more idea of how to deal with these things now. Hopefully these things are becoming clear, slowly, slowly, slowly. So you know what to do to deal with this. Now, one of the opposite side of ill will or anger, the opposite is metta, right? So far we have been talking about how to overcome the bad qualities, how to overcome the anger, negativity, whatever. But of course, overcoming the negative qualities is on a continuum. And once you overcome the negative qualities, you can start to develop the good ones, right? It kind of goes together. Abandon the bad ones and start to develop the good ones, actually developing the metta itself. And this next sutta is more about how, not so much about how, but a little bit about metta practice. It has some very powerful similes about metta practice. It's from the simile of the soul, the Thakatrupama Sutta, which you have probably heard the simile many times, a very famous simile. But I will read a little bit more of that sutta than perhaps you are used to look at all the similes that actually are mentioned there. They're very nice and powerful similes. But before I do that, I just want to again stress and remember that metta is not just about mental development, it's about how we actually live, how we treat people in our ordinary life. So you treat people with kindness in the way you act and the way you speak. That is the foundation for all metta practice. If you treat people kindly in ordinary life, then it becomes possible to move on and to actually treat them also, to think about people with metta. If you don't have that metta yet in ordinary life, then it is very difficult to develop it in meditation practice or in the mind as such. So that is the basic point. How do you treat ordinary people they like? Treat them with kindness. Say things that goes to people's heart, that unifies people, brings people together. If you can do all of that, then you're heading in the right direction. So this, and the symboling of the sword, these are some very profound aspects of metta. How this is kind of the ideal that we're trying to strive towards. So sometimes it's nice to look at the ideal as well, and I will try to explain how this suttas, how this similes, a large number of similes here, how they actually work. By the way, is everybody happy with the previous sutta so far? Yeah? Okay with that? Yeah? Good. Okay. So then we'll go on to the simile of the story.